Whether you think you can or you can't, you're right. Hello and welcome to the I Could Never Do That podcast. I'm Carrie Barrett, and these are the stories of people who have gone into the arena and fought hard to achieve the unthinkable in spite of the fact that, yes, sometimes they are scared and do have some insecurities. Are you ready to go in? It's my hope that after hearing some of these interviews with thought leaders and artists, athletes, musicians, and entrepreneurs, that maybe you too will be able to go from, I could never do that, to, you know what? Maybe I can.
I know we've all been picked on or judged at various times in our lives. Dare I say, sadly, that it's human nature to do so? I mean, we put others down in order to make ourselves feel better. I guess that's the reason why we do this. Well, what happens when bullying or name-calling crosses a line? In the story today, the person on the receiving end of the bullying, she's a public figure, somebody who is constantly judged for her looks, for her knowledge, for her body, for her clothing. And she received a terrible note one day at her place of employment. And what she did is nothing short of remarkable. And so my question is, can you turn hurtful, terrible words into something positive? Is it even possible to overcome the hurt and the shame and turn it into a mission to empower others? Heck yes, you can. And today's guest, Michelle Bandour, a television journalist, is here to share her story about her big fat nose.
Michelle Bandour, thank you for joining me on the I Could Never Do That podcast.
Yes, of course. Thank you for asking me, Carrie.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Well, you actually reminded me sheepishly that our paths did cross last fall. You and I were both in the media room in Kona for the first ever female Ironman World Championship. And were you there covering it for the station that you work for? Or was this more of a personal endeavor for you to be out there covering it?
Well, I mean, let's just say it's nice that I'm a reporter and I was able to get media credentials and could, I'll be clear. My company did not pay for me to go there. They didn't say, hey, this is your assignment. I mean, that would be amazing. It'd be, you know, hashtag best assignment ever. But yeah. Since I am a reporter and I was able to report things on my social media about this historic event. But then, of course, you know, I had a lot of my best friend had qualified and a ton of core teammates, core sports teammates that were both on the team were there as well. So it was just kind of nice. I've done that before. Actually, I covered it for 303 Triathlon in 2016. And so I kind of knew the ins and outs and I just wanted to be there. And so, yeah, I could say I was there as a reporter and a fan and a Sherpa.
All of the above. I put myself in that same category too. Yes. I was there as a media person and as a fan and certainly as a Sherpa. And that's how you and I met very briefly. But I saw and it started, like, all the dots started connecting for me, because it wasn't long after that, like, we were both invited to be on the core sports team for 2024. It's my first year on the team, so I'm very excited to represent core and everything that they stand for. Yes. But then I saw, you know, we have a Facebook group for all of our athletes, and you had posted something about my big fat nose. And I was like, oh, what is this? And then I started to remember, oh yeah, I saw this in Triathlete magazine a while back, a cover story that they did on you. So yes, all the dots connected. But before we really launch into my big fat nose, because wow, can you believe I just said that to you, which is like, how rude of me to say that to you. Tell me a little bit about you. Where did you grow up? And you are a journalist, you are a news reporter. Was that always in your DNA?
You know, I think it was. I used to have one of those, remember those recorders we had, tape recorders with the cassette tapes, and had a little microphone, and I used to interview my stuffed animals.
Oh, yes.
Yes. So I was
Oh,
always, I'd
yes.
have my stuffed animals lined up and I'd interview my stuffed animals. And so, yeah, I grew up in the Midwest. I'm a Midwest Nebraska girl. And I grew up in Omaha. And then I went to school for journalism and at Iowa State University. And, it kind of clicked. I wasn't sure what it meant, because I knew I loved to write. I was always in trouble in class for talking to people and asking questions and, wanting to know and very curious about things. And so just talking to my counselor, I'm like, man, I love writing. I love, and I also love to take photos. I love to take pictures. So I had one of those walls, growing up where it was a cork. I'd had my dad, we got to go get the cork wall. And it was covered from floor to ceiling with photographs that I took. And so I actually, my first semester, I was in to be behind the camera as a photojournalist. And then just talking to my advisors at Iowa State and just kind of seeing what we had. And at the time, Iowa State had an actual television station, the ABC affiliate for that market on campus. So I would be at J school and then go to the TV station and just absorb and be a sponge. And I tried out and then I was the morning anchor my senior year of college. So it kind of progressed that way where advisors were seeing something else about me rather than being behind the camera to be in front to take photographs. But whether you're behind the camera in front, like I knew there, I wanted to be where things were happening, where history was being made, sharing stories, telling stories. So it just kind of all clicked. And yeah, that was, 30 years ago.
I relate a little to that because I went to like radio, TV, film school. Well, I went to undergrad at a liberal arts university in Ohio, also a Midwest girl,
Yeah.
and I know that in the film side of things and broadcast journalism side of things, we had to put news packages together, and if we had to put our sample stories together and go cover something that just happened for real and try to get B-roll footage and try to get interviews with the right people and put it together in like a 3-minute story. And it was exhilarating. It was
Yeah.
exhilarating to do that and to do the chase and to get the interviews and to put it together. Of course, we're splicing tape. And I mean, it was like OG with the big reel to reels back in
Yeah.
the day, but I remember that feeling, that endorphin rush. And if I like you kind of had to do it all too. So like it wasn't like you have a staff that goes on site with you or on location with you sometimes. Sometimes aren't you setting up the camera and you're doing the I mean
Not
it's a
me. I'm
no, good for
no, I've been
you.
lucky. If they call those, well, back in the day, they called them one man bands. Today they're called multimedia journalists, but that's an art itself. So I know people like take their iPhones and all of that, but the stories you see on your local news, these are artists, this is their craft, and these are photographers and they're photojournalists. And so I've always been part of a team where it's been the reporter and the camera person or photographer or photojournalist. So luck for me, I never wanted to do that because I respect their craft so much. And also it's a lot. I mean, it's a lot to put on somebody under deadline pressure to have to shoot, edit, try to appear on camera, all of that. It's too much. We should act. I mean, I could go off, but it should not be happening in our business right now, but it's how people cut corners. And then some people like it. And don't get me wrong, there are some journalists who like doing everything. But for me, I know how talented these people are. And so I like working as a team where we work together. And some places it's just not safe to be by yourself.
Very, very true in some situations and stories that you're reporting on, I would imagine. And are you so now you've been in the business, 30 odd years, and how many markets have you been in?
Oh, geez. I want to say like 13 or 14 television stations, including internships. But how many markets? Oh my goodness. Well, I mean, I was in Ames, so that was in college. Do you want me to go over all of them? Lawrence,
No,
Kansas.
you don't have
Ooh.
it's one of those things where, and I think this is one of those I could never do that discussions because I think people look at what you do, whether you're in studio behind the desk or on location, you know, reporting on something that's happening right now. And it's there's like equal parts glamour and excitement and like, and so a lot of people would just be fearful of even going into that business, but there's not a lot of glamour in it when you are having to go from market to market to work your way up. If become, you know, if getting in a larger market or a bigger city, as it were, is the goal. I mean, it's a grind, and it sounds like for 30 years you've climbed a lot of ladders.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I didn't take your traditional path either. And so, you know, I was in Los Angeles in the number two market, but then I went back home to Omaha for personal reasons, and which I'm glad I did. I was there for 20 years and took care of my parents in their in the end of their lives, which is the best job that I've ever had. So rewarding and something I'll never forget or regret. So for me, I'm not the, oh, I went from teeny tiny, you know, Topeka, Kansas, and then now I'm on the network. I mean, and I mean, yeah, I remember thinking in college, I want to be at the network by the time I'm 30. But you know, things ha happen and your paths change, and so for me, that was the right direction. But I'm currently in Sacramento. I moved to Sacramento 2 years ago after, you know, my mother died in 2016 and my father passed away in 2021. And so our company, Hearst Corporation, the general manager in Omaha, moved to Sacramento, and I really liked her leadership style, and we s stayed in touch. And so I thought, what the heck? I'll just pick up and move across the country. I'm not married. I don't have any kids, you know. So I have my dog.
Yeah.
So for me, that's not for everybody. I mean, you know, you'll read on my website, I have a whole blog about flipping your life at age 57. I mean, I totally just turn my life around, and it hasn't been easy, but it's also been exciting. So yeah, I don't know if people would want to do that or not, but I did. But yeah, so my direction, my path isn't your traditional path when you think of being a television news reporter.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah.
but I've been
So
in big markets and small markets and
And sometimes the bigger ones are not all they're cracked up to be, that's for sure.
yeah.
So that, you know, obviously that is the career path of yours. That is your vocation. You obviously are equally, if not more, passionate about the sport of triathlon and multi-sports. Did you grow up an athlete? Were you any of those, a swimmer, biker, or runner as a child and young adult?
Well, I mean, I was always active growing up. My mom put me in dance, you know, at age 5, the ballet and tap and all of that. And just growing up, you know, I'll never forget my dad teaching me how to ride my bike. And I was blessed and privileged that there was a neighborhood pool and my parents bought a membership. So I would ride my bike down the hill and I'd have to ride my bike up the hill to the pool. So I did just kind of on my own some of the summer swim and dive teams. And looking back, I wish I would have pursued swimming in high school because I really enjoyed it, you know. So it's like, why didn't I do that? But I wanted to be a cheerleader. So, you know, I don't know. So
And
I did,
learning
I
to
went down.
swim,
What'd
learning
you say?
adults. I was going to say, learning to swim as an adult is the most humbling experience one can partake, really. It's really, really humbling.
I know, you know, and it's so amazing that people, adults take that on because I do not remember learning how to swim. I just think my mom must have threw me in the pool when I was a baby. And so that's why I say it was such a privilege that I had that to grow up on. And I mean, that was my babysitter. I was at the pool all day until it closed at 9 p.m. And so, yeah, but I always loved to ride bikes. And then you'll find this interesting. So, you know, in grade school for the PE test, you know, you had to like run a mile or I don't remember how long it was on the track. But my foot flips out. So in grade school, the kids kind of made fun of me for my, you run funny. And so I never, so I was like, I don't like running. I did do track though in junior high. You know, I did the hurdles. And nobody said anything then. Now that I think about that, that's the first time I've thought about that. Nobody said anything. And I'm glad I went out for track, but I just had the back of my mind. I think I run funny. So, like, people are looking at me weird. Or I think my first half marathon was like 35 or 38 or something like that. Because running, I just, and as I'm clunky and big, you know, I just didn't, I wasn't one of the fast people. So I don't know. But now I don't care.
You make mention in your TED Talk, which of course I will link in the show notes.
Oh, thanks.
Because it's hilarious, it's poignant, it's heartwarming and sad. I mean, it's amazing what you can do in, you know, 13 minutes or however long you had the stage that day. But you said, like, you hate running. Like, it's just not your thing. And now I understand why. You know, when you are sent those signals from a young age that you look weird or you're not graceful or whatever, it's amazing what sticks with you.
Seriously, I know. And I didn't really realize that. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I had no idea the impact that had on me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, which is a segue into the big topic for today. And, you know, as a TV journalist, you were saying before we started recording that women reporters especially are subject to some cruel emails and letters and correspondence, if you could even call it that, bullying. And you were the recipient of one of those. When did you get that note in the mail? And like, what station were you at, or what city were you in? And if you could talk about that dollar bill that came in the mail to you.
This note right here?
It comes with you wherever you go.
Yes, I thought, well, I don't know if you can really see it.
I see an Elvis stamp.
Stamp. Yeah, yes. So this was, I was at KTV. It was the summer of, July 18th, 2017 is the stamp on here. And it was sent to me. And, you know, it was exciting because nobody sends cards anymore. Who sends a card in the mail? So it was exciting. I mean, and I happened to just walk by my mailbox, you know, one day, because everything obviously, you know, was through social media and email. So it was nice to get a note because that takes time. And so, so I got the note. I was really excited. And yeah, there was a dollar bill inside. So I was so excited. And this note. And it says, Michelle, please accept this gift and use it wisely. 50 cents for the bags under your eyes and 50 cents for your big fat nose. You need the help. Sign a viewer. Yeah, I probably can't see that very well. Oh, yeah. But yeah, and so I went, wait, what? Because I was excited because the dollar bill fell out and I went, you know, you're getting a note. And it just went from, oh, just to this gut punch, you know? Just a
sick
feeling. Yeah. Because I guess now that I realize the kids who were saying I ran funny also made fun of my big fat nose at that grade school. My mom pulled me out of that grade school, by the way.
Oh, she did. And so like to set that, you know, to set this up, I mean, this was something that you've battled your entire life. Like, it's like these kids when you were young made fun of your nose.
They did. And I remember thinking, I hate my nose. It just took me back to, you know, it took me back to all those insecure and the anxiety and the sadness I felt and just the dislike for myself, for my appearance. And it did really have an effect on me. And I remember thinking, I'm getting a nose job. You know, when I grow up and I make enough money, I'm definitely getting a nose job. Mm-hmm. And so it was one of those things. And I used to tell my parents that. My parents have big fat noses. And we have Polish yep. noses. I mean, I have the same nose as my parents. And so I'm sure that hurt their feelings, you know, and I said, I want to change myself because of the comments. And so, yeah, this hurt. I mean, this really brought something back up inside of me that, I mean, I when I talked to school kids, I said, do you know what I did? And they said, what? And I said, I cried. And they all could relate to it, you know, because I did. I ended up crying when I read that because it just brought back all those feelings of how much I didn't like myself.
I want people who might be listening right now to even think about that. Like, you know, like whether we were on the receiving end of cruelty as kids, and I'm sure to some extent a lot of us were for whatever reason. I was a chubby kid and short, big boobs. Like, I was just awkward. And so even today as a 51-year-old adult to get in a bathing suit is excruciating for me because I know I go right back to it. And I think when, and that's when I read your story and watched your TED talk, I went right back to those feelings of being feeling less than or ugly or gross or whatever, you know, all of those feelings. And so you know, when, if people are listening to this or watching this clip, it's like, what were those moments for you? And like, how does that viscerally make you feel, whether you're on the receiving end or if you were happen to be on the end that, you know, dished it out, you know, which I'm sure we've done a time or two in our lives as well when we've been on that other side.
I
And
mean, yeah, I was going to say, and just honestly, there's something about yourself that you don't like that you wish you could change, right? Your physical appearance. There's things everyone you speak to, oh, I don't like my teeth. I wish I was taller. I want to lose weight. I want to gain weight. I wish I had more muscle, you know, all the different things. My hair, I hate my hair, all those different things. And again, talking to school kids now, when I share my story with them and I ask them, you know, what do people, are you made fun of? What do they say? And these kids are so brave and they raise their hand and they tell me the things that are said to them that are hurtful. And so, I mean, it's still happening. You know, I don't think it'll ever go away because of our insecurities and because of the placement of importance on physical appearance. And so it is just getting over that and learning how to love yourself for
Well,
everything you do.
what I loved is that, you know, you talk about you went to your GM, you went to your general manager, and they said they said what? They were
Well,
like, they wanted you, like they wanted some
yeah, so
revenge right away.
it was my news director, and so I had some female bosses, which is amazing. And so, you know, and she paved the way for female journalists in the Omaha market because she was one of like three in the 70s. And she would talk about the comments that she received, and you know, you don't belong here. And you know, that's just because she was a woman. You don't belong here. What are you doing here? But she told me, she's like, you know what? Just go to church, light a candle, and pray for the son of a bitch.
Good Catholic woman.
Yes, which is amazing. It's just like that's just what you have to do, you know?
And but you like, which is true, you know, in some respects, I love that piece of advice because you do have to like pray for those people that are so disturbed and so unhappy that they would take the time to do what they did. But you took a different approach, actually. You went the full advocacy route and said, I'm going to turn this horrible feeling into something positive for myself and for hundreds and probably now thousands of young women, young girls. And you've turned it into a nonprofit, you know, and an opportunity for girls to learn to swim, bike, run, feel empowered. So tell me about how that came to be, and like, what was that process like of setting all of that organization up to get it going?
Yeah, it's been quite an incredible journey of, you know, taking this note, you know, and when you asked me about it, I literally go back to the day and I remember where I was, I remember what I did, I remember showing people and people were what. And so where it's progressed to today and kind of taken off, you know, I just knew it was an opportunity, you know, after getting over the hurt, then I was mad. Like, how,
Who
who
does
does
that?
this? What a
Who does
jerk.
this?
You know, and I still don't know who it is. People ask me. I don't know if it's a man, woman, who know. I have no idea. And I don't care. But we always thank them, right? But yeah, so I just thought I have to do something. And people know I love animals. They said, well, do something, take that dollar and, you know, ask for more dollars and put it to an animal shelter. But I knew there was something else. And there's an organization in Omaha called Fit Girl. And so we started raising Banderbucks and you know, dollars for her organization, which is great. She does everything from tennis lessons to camp to piano lessons. And so it was a lot. And so I felt like triathlon would kind of get lost under that. And so me and a couple other of the co-founders, Erin Sullivan, who's our president right now, she's amazing. She's a master swim coach. we just kind of got together and wanted to do our own thing, you know, and do our own triathlon club. And so I know what the sport of triathlon has done for me. You know, it came in my life when I was, you know, going through a bad experience, and I just needed something to focus on. I knew I always wanted to do triathlon, but you know, life happens, and I didn't start doing like the shorter distance triathlons till my mid and late 30s. So anyway, I just know what it's done. It's given me confidence and discipline and the sense of accomplishment and organization.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. All the things.
All the
yeah,
things all you need to things. Work on.
Yeah.
My you know, my savings account is a lot smaller.
Yeah. But, yeah. I was going to say, it's like, yeah, on your news reporter budget.
Salary. Yeah. Yeah. That's why I never got a nose job.
Yeah.
Let's just say that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so Erin Sullivan, like, the reason she wanted to do a tri club was because of the expense, because she, you know, she went to Kona in the 90s, and then she just watched. So she was in the sport early on, and she watched it grow to this, you know, disc wheels, race wheels, you know, $13,000 bikes, and how expensive it got. And it just really turned her off. But she loves the sport and loves swimming. And so she was like, you know, we need to do something that's free. We don't want to charge anybody. And so that was the premise of it, right? So turning a negative into a positive, inspiring people, teaching kids at an early age, the self-confidence and, you know, love yourself no matter. There's so many things we have our mission statement has all these values. Mm-hmm. And so it just came about with a few of us. And then we created a committee, and then it literally was, hey, does your kid have a bike that's you're not using anymore? Can we have your bike? It was such a grassroots organization from the beginning. But the thing is, what we learned from this is just ask. And every time I asked somebody for money, I pretty much got it. So that for we let's see, that was in we started meeting in January, February, and
of what year?
2018.
Okay.
So 2018 was our first year. And we had this small committee. There's an amazing college in Omaha. It's a women's college, College of St. Mary. And they have a great pool where Omaha Masters had swim practices. So I'd swim there, and their pool is amazing. They are right next to a city trail. They have this big campus. So we just went to them and said, you know, Aaron already had the connection, you know, with the Masters program, and said, hey, what do you think of this? And they're like, sign us up. You can use it for free.
Oh my gosh.
Right.
Just ask.
Right. And just ask people for money. I was asking everybody for money. Suddenly, like $20 bills were showing up, did a news story. And of course I put it all over social media about this jerk, you know, who sent me this. Like, what? And so, yeah, you just ask people for money. You know, you go to the bank and ask for money, you go to the grocery stores. Like there's a grocery store where you can fill out a form and they'll give you $25 gift certificate. Well, we went to all like 15 grocery stores, right? So that's a lot of $25. We can get a lot with $25, you know? So, yeah. So we just kind of did this grassroots organization the first year. I did a story on it. We had a half hour news program and did more on that. And, you know, hastily kind of learned how to sign up a registration form and ask people, you know, there's no cost, but like, if you have a bike or if you have a swimsuit, you know, let us know, you know, because we have every zip code, right? So we have families involved who don't have to worry about it, and they have their own equipment. We have single parents, right, who can't afford elite sports, and you name everything, kids in foster care, refugees. I mean, so that first year, you know, we're so excited when we had 30 people sign up. You know, we're like, oh my gosh, we have 30 people. Well, by the time it started, we had 200.
Oh,
what are we going to do with 200?
200 kids. And like, so this is like an 8-week program that you were going to put them through, or was
Yeah, our first year we learned a lot that first year. We did June, July, August, and September. So we kind of ran into the thing every Thursday night. So it was like 12 weeks, I think.
Yeah.
So
okay.
We learned a lot, but it worked.
200 people.
So we had 181 girls actually ended up crossing the finish line that first year.
Gosh. And was it a local triathlon that coincided, or did you put on Did you put on like
Right on campus, it was our
Banders
well,
triathlon?
no, I mean, and that's, I mean, because I want to say it's not just me. I mean, there's no way I could do this by myself. You know, it was just getting with like-minded people, and also, you know, everyone has their own connections and that sort of thing, and their different flair, and you know what's good about each, you know, what your skills that you can bring to the table, and everybody had something different, and so you know, we just started recruiting, and of course, triathletes, you know, want to give back as well because, again, the sport does offer. It's not a solo sport. It offers so much more than just swim, bike, run. You know, the race day is just that's the fun part. You know, that's just, oh, okay. You know, let's put this all together. But leading up to it, the friendships you build, what you learn about yourself, the discipline, and like I keep saying, that sense of accomplishment. So I have the job of being like the Mike Riley of our, you know, of our triathlon. So I'm at the finish line crying because these girls, their smiles. And then what we did is, you know, we didn't want friends. If friends signed up together, we just assigned people in their own groups. So throughout the summer, they're each in their own groups. They have a group leader, you know, a volunteer group leader, and then they come up with names for their groups. And you know, they create friendships. Like, oh my gosh, we have these two girls who didn't, who both were separately in Iron Hawk Juniors. Then they go to the same high school and they knew each other in high school. And they said, hey, they said to each other, I'm done with this program. You know, I aged out, but I want to go back and volunteer. You should do it with me. And then she's like, I was an Iron Hawk Junior too. So they both were Iron Hawk Juniors and they come back to volunteer.
Oh my
And
God.
it's just, oh, anyway, I have goosebumps thinking about it.
I can just hear these stories all day. And
Yes.
so Iron Hawk is that the name of the
The tri
club?
club, Iron Hawk Juniors Triathlon Club.
Yes.
Yes.
And if people want to learn more about that, is the best way to go to like mybigfatnose.com and learn more about it there, or learn more
Yeah,
about
they
your
can learn more about it on
advocacy
my
work?
website, but we do have our own ironhawkjuniors.org. We're also IH Juniors Tri Club on Instagram and then Iron Hawk Juniors on Facebook. So yeah, so follow us on social media. Oh
It's
yeah, we've got all kinds of
wow.
stuff.
So it's 6 years in now at this point,
Yes.
and what you said, you've learned a lot. Where is it at now? Is it like a well-known thing in the community at this point? And tell me, some wonderful success stories of kids. Oh my God, you're beaming. I can totally
Oh
tell. Yeah,
well,
you're beaming.
so this, you know, every year, of course, you know, we learn things that we can do better and how to streamline it, and you know, because we do, we have them run through a transition. They have set up a transition. It's the whole thing, and it is right there on campus. So you know, ages 7 to 10, they do their version of their triathlon, and then 11 to 14. And so what happened this year was we opened registration. And well, what's cool too is I should say we do a winter reunion. So College of St. Mary lets us come in and we have the pool, the gymnasium, so that they come back. And that's when this is what is so amazing. This was Aaron's idea too, that what we've learned that first and second year was, gosh, these kids were spending too much time teaching kids how to swim or how to properly ride a bike. So we offer free swim and bike lessons before, so starting in April. And they can sign up on Sundays, and our volunteers, you know, teach them how to safely ride a bike, how to swim, so that when practice starts, they already can swim, you know, 25 yards or whatever. And so it's wonder, it's free. And then also offer to the parents who want to learn how to swim too.
Oh my God.
Right? Parents or guardians or, you know,
Yeah,
yeah.
what a bullseye there, just because it empowers the child to want to continue and the parent to want to be supportive of that child. And I can only imagine how many parents are coming at this and they don't know how to swim either. And so they've never felt confident enough to even teach their child. What a gift that
Oh, and I know
they've
one
been.
parent, she watched her daughter go through this and she went and did a sprint try herself last summer. right? So what's cool, what happened this year was, okay, so you know, we do the winter reunion, we open things up. Our registration, it usually takes like maybe 3 to 4 months to fill up, and we cap it at between 200 and 250. 250, like absolute, because you know that's a lot. And it filled up in 2 weeks. We have a waiting list. This is a record breaking. So what it tells us, and what it should tell other communities and other people, there's a need. There's a craving for this. There's a need for this type of positive influence and staying active, because you know, girls in this age group, they what is the percentage now? It's something like 70 to 80% of girls in this age group drop out of any physical activity because, like we said, parents can't afford, single parents or parents, they can't afford the elite sports. They're not good enough for the high school team. You know, they don't have the equipment. They don't have a bike. It's expensive. They learning how to swim, it's expensive.
Yeah,
And
and
so they just drop.
bodies changing of
Bodies
when,
are changing. You're
yeah.
uncomfortable. Kids are making fun of your big boobs or no boobs or
Yeah.
whatever. So that's the sad part. I mean, there's statistics out there. I probably should have checked them before, but there's a large group of girls that just drop out. And so what we have girls in our club that are every size and shape, every ethnicity. You know, we bring in translators if we need them for the parents. It's just that we just hopefully we've thought of everything by now. But what it is telling us is that we need to support our young girls early, give them these skills of, and give them the self-confidence and the discipline and the camaraderie and the teamwork and the positivity, you know, to support each other. And it's just so amazing. I wish everybody could be at that finish line with me, you know, every the last Sunday of July, when they put it all together. And oh, I can go on and on about the finish line, but when you know, there's no we don't have first, second, third. We don't time it. We just call them the, you know, the final finisher because it's in no particular order. And so when some girls are crossing the finish line and other girls who have already finished, they go back to, with their group and they run across it together. Oh, and we have them break the tape each time. So we have volunteers holding the tape. So every girl gets to break the tape, you know?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
It's like it's overwhelming what one person can do. And I think we're like where I was started, you know, with being impressed with all of this, A is just how you handled the note and the criticism. But the fact that the TV station also gave you airtime to talk about it and allowed people to like I just love that it was the message I think that you were saying was, you know, this person sent me a dollar. I want more of dollars. Just send me a dollar. And it so you weren't even asking for corporate sponsorships of $10,000 or whatever. It's like you went at this so grassroots. And did the viewers come on board and send the station like dollars at a time? I mean, what did the like I feel like that's what like got me was that the station supported you in this too.
Well, they really didn't have a choice. I was going to do it. I'm just kidding. No, I mean, how could you not, right? I mean, it's that they did give me the airtime, and I do appreciate that. And actually, Ariel, the general manager, she was a general manager at the time too. So I had both those strong female, you know, leaders there that were great mentors and and leaders. And so, yeah, how could you not? But yeah, it was wonderful. Yeah, we had a half hour show on it. We had a couple news stories on it. And now, you know, we just all the we have quite a few of the different stations. They come out on race day to watch this, to
Oh,
watch
that's
these girls.
fantastic. That's
Yeah.
fantastic. And you do a lot of, you know, one of the things that you did with your website, which is mybigfatnose.com. And again, it feels so odd to just say that.
It's a
But
compliment now.
it is. I love that you've reclaimed it. It's like, you know, I work for a company called Feisty Media, and people think feisty is, you know, a negative connotation. And it's like, no, we're reclaiming that word. And we want that to be a positive word, and like we're not backing down. And that's what I love what you did with this whole initiative. You do a lot of public speaking, as a result of this. And so I know that you speak at schools. I know that you speak at different, you know, a lot of like young women and girls organizations and things like that. Where else are you available for speaking engagements?
Anybody who wants me. I mean, I think, you know, I saw once the Iron Cowboy speak at this corporate function, and it was really inspiring. So honestly, like, anybody who wants me to come talk, because even when I speak to adults definitely can relate to this. Like you said, it brought you back to what you felt as a child. And so, you know, also, you know, I did do it, you know, I talked for a government agency actually in California, here in California, who brought me, you know, on by Zoom, you know, to talk to their particular department, which was still 200 to 300 people. You know, lots of comments, you know, even, you know, from dad saying, oh, thank you so much. You know, I get one of my daughter gets so down on herself. Like, how do I inspire my daughter? And also, you know, it's not about triathlon either. If there's something that you want to do, you know, whether it's to write a book or paint a picture or learn a new language, you know, just, it's one of those things where just don't hold yourself back. Just go and do it. Don't let any of your fears or insecurities hold you back. I mean, it's hard. It's hard to put yourself out there because there is a lot of criticism.
Yes. Yes. It is very hard.
Yeah. But that's what I just would hope to inspire anyone. So yeah, schools are great. Any corporate events, you know, yeah, whatever, yeah. You know, I think I'm open. I think, you know what the thing is with my story, unfortunately, it's a universal language and we all can relate no matter what your age.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. The bullying, man, if there's anything that I wish we could stop in this world is the bullying. And on your website as well, I had to go back and reread some of this, unfortunately, because it just like was like a sucker punch. You actually have a tab on your website, mybigfatnose.com, with viewer emails. And so you've selected a handful of emails that other female broadcast journalists have received. I assume obviously you know some of these women that were on the recipient end of some of these emails. And I don't want to read them because I don't want to give voice to these cruel people that send them in, but I encourage people to go read them because it is amazing what people will say in anonymity. And as you said, and it kind of shocked me to hear this, they will criticize a woman's look, her nose, her facial features, her clothing, her hair. But men aren't the recipients of that type of criticism. If your male colleagues get feedback, it's usually about the story and not about their looks. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. And luckily, you know, we have so many great, you know, male counterparts who are very supportive, you know, of us, of the women. You know, we're all a team working together. But yeah, I mean, nobody writes in and says, you know, hey, George, you know, your hair is too long. Or, hey, George, you know, why you have that belly? Hey, George, you're too old. You know, nobody says that to the men. Oh, hey, I don't like your tie. I mean, really, that just, it doesn't happen. And men do not get criticized on their appearance, but us women, we do, you know. Hey, you're too old to be wearing a sleeveless dress. What's that belly? Are you pregnant? You know, I mean, just horrible. You look like a pig. So just some of the things, and like you said, we shouldn't even say the things that people actually write.
I know. Yeah. But I'm glad that you have them there because I think it's important for people to see that for better, you know, well, sadly, it's not for better at all, but it's like, sadly, like your Big Fat Nose letter is like not an exclusive thing that has only happened once in the history of broadcast journalism. Like, it's all too common. And I'm sure it's even more ubiquitous now with social media because people can, you know, can swim in anonymity behind the scenes. And so, yeah. And so you wanted to show those letters. Why was it important for you to share some of those comments that people have received.
Yeah, you know, I thought about that as far as, do I really want to share some of these, you know, hateful words? And, you know, we didn't even talk about, you know, women of color and ethnicity and the comments they get. You know, that is a whole other issue. But I just think it's important because, there's a human being on the other end of what you're writing. You know, there's the people who send these notes. That's a person that you're talking about. And would you like to be spoken to that way? Would you like somebody to call those things out on you? Or, you know, imagine receiving that at work. You know, so you're at work and this comes up, and sometimes they send it to a general email, so the entire staff reads it. And, you know, I know for one young reporter, she was mortified that somebody wrote in and talked about her appearance, and that, you know, the people, the leaders in the newsroom, the anchors who have been there for 20 something years, she was embarrassed and ashamed, although she shouldn't have been, but that was her reaction. And so I just think that I just want people to be aware that this does happen, and give us some grace when you're criticizing us, even with how divided the country is and with people not enjoying journalism these days. You know, we're doing our job and we're doing the best to find the truth. And then when you throw something like that at us, it's hard, but you know what? We're going to keep our heads up and we're going to do our job and continue on.
Yeah. I mean, you truly are on the front lines of truth out there. And I appreciate that very, very, very much. And, you know, this show obviously is, I could never do that. And especially in today's age, do you ever speak to young up and coming journalism students about these things that you're having to combat that don't even have to do with the news in many cases? Like, what are their fears and how do you talk to them about it?
Yeah, I've actually created a class called Reporting While Female.
And oh my God, that is incredible.
Yes. And so in my move, I haven't been able to teach it since I've been here, but I'm talking to some folks about that. I taught the class at University of Nebraska in Lincoln, and it was a pop-up class, just, you know, 2 days. And what I thought was interesting that there really weren't a lot of journalism students in there. But it was, these women were interested, and they all had, even out of the business, they all had stories to share about being criticized, being a woman, and whatever it is that they were doing. Sports, one girl was a bank teller, just different things. And so, yeah, so definitely, I'd love to continue talking to young journalists and teach that course, or just even be a guest speaker, because it is important, the things you have to be prepared for when you're out there. For everyone to see.
Yeah. At this point now, you know, you're in the 55 to 59 year old age group. Thank goodness we're not the same age group. I wouldn't want to race against you. But you've now done 7 Ironmans, at least.
I'm at 9.
You're now. At 9 Ironmans. All right. Well, shoot, I got to come out of retirement now. You're at 9 Ironmans.
10 in October. I'll be doing Ironman California.
Have you done that one before?
Yeah, actually, I was signed up when I lived in Nebraska, the bomb cyclone year when it was canceled.
Yes, yes.
And then I didn't know I'd be moving to Sacramento. And then I was signed up for it, but I was trying to defer, but Ironman just ignored me. So I went ahead and did it. And to be honest with you, I had a blast because I was starting to meet people in Sacramento who were training for it. So I'm like, oh, I'll go out on a ride with you. I'll do this. And then I'm like, oh, well, Ironman's ignoring me. So I didn't defer. And it was really fun. It was the really windy year. So then I volunteered last year. And so I thought, well, I'll do it. I'll do it.
Okay. Okay. That's very exciting for me to hear, because that's, if I come out of iron retirement, that is one of the ones that I'm considering doing.
Yeah.
Because I know it falls at a good time of year for my training, but, under the pretense of, I could never do that, you know, a 9-time Ironman, doing what you do with Iron Hawks juniors, your job, is there anything at this point that you're like, I could never do that? Or do you feel like you are equipped to take on pretty much anything? And you had to deal with it sounds like you were your parents' caretakers, which is a whole other, I could never do that scenario.
Yeah. Oh, everybody can take care of their parents. So yeah. You just do it. They took care of you. It's just what we have to give back. What could I never do? Oh, I would never want to run 100 miles.
Oh, I'm with you on that
Period. How about
one.
that? I could never do that. It's not that I couldn't do it. I don't want to do it. Yeah.
Yes.
How about let's do this? How about I don't want to do it is the name of your podcast. No.
No,
I
yeah.
don't know. You know, Ironman definitely the what you learn during a race, the struggles that you encounter and the mind games that you play, and we know our mind is stronger than our body. You know, I definitely take that out into other aspects of my life. So it's definitely made me stronger and made me more confident and knowing, oh my gosh, yeah, I can do that. So I can do this kind of thing.
And it sounds like that's the message that you leave with your girls too, with the Iron Hawk Juniors, is that you can do anything. And it sounds like that's the ultimate reward of that $1 bill that you got in 2017.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope we inspire them. I know that I've heard some girls saying they want to do an Ironman, and you know, at 15, you know, they can do regular races, you know, USAT races. So we've got some, and you know, and even girls who have now are on the track team at school or on the swim team at school, and they wouldn't have done that before.
Well, thank you for everything that you're doing to
Of
turn
course.
a negative into a positive in this life. And I hope that you feel that that has come back to you in spades, and that light that you're shining for others just negates that jerk who found it in he or her heart to write a letter to say what they said. And it really, I can't tell you, Michelle, how much it moved me to start to
Oh.
dig into your story more. And sadly, I think it's because it's the universality of being picked on. And I think that when people hear this, they will also be inspired to make changes or to help you. And so, do you take donations from people anywhere?
You
If it's
betcha.
cash, okay. Yes,
Yeah.
excellent,
Yep.
excellent,
Yep. It's
excellent.
right on our website, ironhawkjuniors.org. You can donate there. But yeah, we have some great sponsor, like corporate sponsors now too. So we're legit 501c3.
Ironhawkjuniors.org.
Oh, and can I
Best
add
of,
this?
yes,
Sorry.
please, yes.
One thing too, when we were starting out and you're just asking people for things. Okay, the women triathletes across the country, you know, heard my story and boxes of, you know, gently used gear shows up. So, and that is the one thing the girls love. Like they have a real this is what a real triathlon kit is like. This, oh, I'm a real triathlete. And people have been so generous with just the kits and the clothing and the hats and the shorts and shoes and all of it. So anyway, we do
That's
that too.
great. Do you
Yeah.
still actively take gently used
We
tri
sure
kits
do.
and wetsuits and
No wetsuits because we're just in a pool.
oh,
So yeah.
right. Okay. But yeah,
Yeah.
gently used tri kits and maybe other equipment, some goggles or things like that. Just
Yeah, we do give them brand new goggles, so I know everybody's got like old goggles laying around. So you know, there's things we don't take, but yeah, we've got some good sponsors too, so it's good.
yeah. Well, thank you again for everything, especially, the triathlete in me is like keeping the sport alive, doing your part to, not only help empower young girls and women to be confident, but also trying to grow this little teeny sport that you and I love so much that has given us so much in life. And I can't even like it's crazy how much this dumb little multi-sport has given me. And so to come across and meet people like you, it puts the cherry on top of my big fat sundae.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Yeah,
You're
we need to
welcome.
grow the numbers. Let's get those girls to college. There's scholarships that schools are just throwing out too. So for all the new, you know, it's an NCAA sport now. So let's keep it growing. Let's get more girls in it. Let's go.
We need that Caitlin, we need the Caitlin Clark of
We
triathlon.
do,
Actually,
yes.
we do have her. I think her name is Taylor Nib.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, thanks again, and I really appreciate your time on this Friday.
Yeah, oh no, thank you, Carrie. It was wonderful. Anytime.
MyBigFatNose.com is her personal site if you'd like to know more, or request Michelle as a speaker at any event, school assemblies, sports teams, church groups.
corporate events, you name it. I mean, let's face it, a theme of turning a negative experience into a positive movement is universal across all walks of life, isn't it? And if you want to learn more specifically about her triathlon program, visit ironhawkjuniors.org, ironhawkjuniors.org. Thank you, Michelle, for your time, and thank you for all of your time. You can support and share this independent podcast via the Buy Me a Coffee app or Venmo, and I'll link up how to do that in the show notes. I really appreciate it. As always, if you think you can never do something, think again. All of us have the power to change lives. See you next time.